It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here. And my partner, Mike Ward, on assignment this week. Not to worry. He'll be back soon. Of course, Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament going on today. It's the precursor to the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Reminder, of course, we're still fishing. The COVID-19 regulations have changed the party or the show that goes on around the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament and, of course, next week's Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. But they are still fishing. The categories are, except for red snapper, still the same. And hopefully get the kids out there today. Remember, you don't have to buy the tickets ahead of time for the Roy Martin like you do next week for the big rodeo. You take the kids out. I like this deal. You get out, catching some fish with the kids. You can come into the rodeo site at Dolphin Island and buy your ticket after you've caught the fish. So if you didn't get your ticket already, head on down, get the fish, get the kids on those fish today. All right, real excited about today's show. And it's good we got Mike Ward out of here because he wouldn't be taking up all my time because this is a guy I've wanted to talk to a long time. This is one of the people that I'm a fan of in the outdoors world. And I consume what he does in video and what he does in podcast form. And it's a real treat for me to have Lake Pickle on from Primos. Lake, thanks for your time. Thanks for being on.
Yeah, man. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's cool, and it's interesting to hear your voice on the show because I hear your voice riding down the road in my truck a bunch when I listen to the Speak the Language podcast, and I want to talk about that as well. But for those seven people that still hadn't heard of Lake Pickle and Primos, tell us, what do you do for Primos?
So I am primarily a videographer for Primos Hunting. I'm on the road a lot, you know, with elk season and then deer hunting, you know,
All right, so you said you're a videographer and you start off with elk season until, I don't know, I mean, you say the whole way through turkey season, but you personally extended turkey season into the summertime, like.
I'm a videographer and I manage the social media for Primos and then I do the podcast as well. But yeah, to hit on what you talk about, we went to Maine, and that was the first time in my life I'd shot a turkey in the month of June. It was different.
You know, I heard you talking on that podcast about wanting to shoot a turkey in the month of May, let alone June. You know, I got to do that for the first, and I'm 48, and I got to do it this year. Alabama, we moved our season later this year, and for the first time ever, I did that. I don't know why it's any different than shooting one in April, but it did feel cool. So I imagine June must have been something special.
It was wild, man. It really was because, you know, growing up in Mississippi, I've grown up my whole life where turkey season ends on May the 1st. So I remember, and I never, still to this day, I've not killed a turkey on the last day of Mississippi season. So until Primos, I'd never shot a turkey in May. So I remember the first time I did that, I was like, man, this is crazy. But this year, shooting that one in June, that was wild. I was like, never in my, you know, when I was 13 years old trying to figure turkey hunting out, I never really would have thought that I'd be shooting a turkey in Maine, of all places, in the month of June. It was pretty fun. It was a cool experience.
It's such a Dave Owens thing to do. Dave's a friend of the show. He's on with us from time to time. And every time I talk to Dave, I said, you just make me mad at the world when you keep you're hunting. He said, it's not that easy, Sean. I said, well, I know, but you're hunting in June, man. And it's a good thing. So you start to see you're in the videography business. I would also say you are personality plus for Primos, and you've become as Primos has aged. I'll say it that way. Keep me out of trouble. May age right. Some. You and Jordan have, for me, have taken over being really some of the faces and the go-to with Primos. I, like you, grew up watching the Primos videos way back in the old days when it was VHS. What a big deal it was for me when something new from Primos came out. I watched the VHS over and over again, and I'm thinking about today, the pressure on the fact that y'all got to produce and get stuff to the web. I mean, it was a big deal when the VHS, I went down, rode my bike down to the store and rented it, right? Down at the Blockbuster or whatever. Now y'all are getting that stuff, and people are demanding. I was satisfied with one bow hunting, VHS. Now y'all got to put stuff up. You know, as soon as you put something up, I'm sure people are saying, where's the next episode, man? Where is it?
Yeah, it's different, man, for sure. Because it's funny because I kind of came in when I started at Primo's. I kind of came in right at the back end of that. And what I mean is I kind of like I remember the first Primo's video I ever watched was when you remember the double stack cassette tapes, not cassette tapes, the double stack VHSs.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the first Primo's video I ever watched was on one of those, and then obviously they moved to DVDs. And when I started at Primo's, and that's been 6 years ago now, we were still making DVDs, and we made DVDs for the first 2 years that I was in, with them, and then we stopped and went to just doing the television show and web stuff, which has been, honestly, man, it's been really fun. It's been a lot of work, it's been a little bit of a learning curve for everybody, but I've enjoyed it because it's where everything's going. I mean, obviously, people don't really buy, in general, people aren't really buying DVDs anymore. We live in such a fast-paced world, and it's starting to move this stuff to where it's strictly either on the on television or web-based. It's cool. It's cool to watch it grow and watch. Me personally, growing up as a Primo's fan, it's cool to be a part of it evolving. I guess watching it stick with the times and stay relevant and stay the brand that it's always been.
I think that's got to be an advantage for the brand. And by the way, too, side note, if y'all are ever looking to bring back a supply, maybe back catalog of DVDs and VHS, we've got drawers at my house and at the hunting camp. We have a high volume of Primo's DVDs at the hunting camp. So I think you could probably stop at hunting camps all over the Southeast or all over the country and pull a drawer out there by the TV and have y'all's DVDs there. But the fact that you grew up with this product and then you get the job, and it's a really great story too about hustling, how you get the job and get on with Primo's. But it would make me happy. It makes me happy because you have this. You're rooted. You're talking about what's new, but you're rooted. You know what the brand is. Nobody had to teach you what the brand was when you showed up.
Right. Yeah. It was it's a story, and it's like I always say this. I won't say this in front of Brad now because he would mess with me about it, but because me and Brad were always messing with each other. But when I was I killed my first turkey when I was 12 years old. Wow. And the guy that took me hunting, his name was Keith, and Keith was filming me on just a little home handy cam, and he films me picking the turkey up, and I pick the turkey up and I go to throw him over my shoulders, and before I throw him over my shoulders, I kind of hold his spurs up and I say, "He's got some nice carrying handles." And the reason I said that,
I know it,
is that is a direct quote from Brad Ferris in one of the Truth videos. I knew that. Like, Brad was one of my heroes on that. I mean, I liked all of them, but Brad was one of the ones that just stuck out to me.
Yeah.
And so that wasn't an isolated incident. Like, and not even when I was getting filmed with a handy cam. Like, I would just be hunting with buddies and I would quote Primo's. I was a super fan.
Having that, and then you growing the side of the digital and the TV show and all that, it's good. I mean, you know the story. You know the backstory. Nobody had to teach you that.
Yeah. I can't overstate how fortunate and blessed I've been, and how blessed I feel to just be in that position and be able to do some of the things that I've been given the opportunity to do. It's been great.
What I like too is your singular desire and to do this for a living. Now, a lot of us would be leaving for college or going, "Well, I think I might want to do this or I might want to do that." You were a kid and already knew you wanted to work for Primo's.
Yeah, that's how it went, man. I still remember. And like I always say, like you can call my mother, you can call June Pickle if you feel so inclined to, and ask her and see if this story is proof, see if the story is true. But I remember it clear as day. I was like 10 years old, 10 or 11, and I was watching a Primo's video on the TV, and she just came in there and we were talking, and she said, "You think about what do you want to do when you grow up?" I said, "I want to go work for Primo's. That's what I wanted to do."
But you kept that up. There might have been another kid, even maybe a young Sean Sullivan, if they would have asked me that, I would have said that. But I would have, by by 2 weeks later, I'd have said, well, I want to be Evel Knievel or something. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't have stuck. You stuck with it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And then you made that come true. You talked about that story, and there's it's a great story about how you got on with Primos. You were already at Mississippi State, right? You were already studying. You're in college, and then you got a call to be able to get on board with Primos.
Yeah. So, I think what set me apart as far as getting me in the position of getting that phone call is I knew that's what I wanted to do, and so I was actively pursuing things that would put me in a position to be able to do that, right? So when I was 20 years old, I took an internship with a show called Midwest Whitetail.
Mm-hmm.
They offered a six-month deal where you drive up there, and at the time, they're still around for the show, but you kind of the basics, or run a camera, how to produce it, editing, kind of just how the whole machine works, you know. And that's what I tell, you know, because I get that question all the time from guys. Most of them now are guys probably in their early 20s or, you know, 18 to early 20s. Or, you know, how in the world do you break into the hunting industry? And I say the thing that set me apart the most is I found a way to get some sort of professional experience. Mm-hmm. Because there is a high saturation of people that want to do this kind of job, but no one really knows how to get started. And so I'm like, do anything you possibly can to get professional experience, because if you have professional experience, that sets you apart from a whole lot of people. So I did that internship, and then I moved back and started going to school in Mississippi State. And I got in touch with Brad Ferris, one of my friends that I worked with at Midwest, ran into him at the ATA show, and said, hey, we've got a kid that, you know, went through our internship program, and he's local. And I remember we had an exit interview when I was at that internship. And in the exit interview, you kind of talk about what you learned. And, you know, they were real interested in what do you want to do going forward. And I was – my goal hadn't changed. You know, I was talking to him at that exit interview. I said, I want to go work for Primos. That is my number one goal. And so when they ran into Brad, they told him that. And Brad told him, gave him his email address, and so I emailed Brad, and we just kind of started, you know, having just a little bit of communication. And I ended up running into Brad at we have a local sporting show in Jackson called the Wildlife Extravaganza, and Primo's always had a booth there because they're a local company. And I was there, and I saw Brad at the booth, and I was like, you know, I should go up there and basically just put a face with a name. The kid that's emailing you, you know?
Right. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We'll run to the break. Let's do this. Run the break. Come right back, and we'll get the antenna raised up on that CB and get Lake Pickle back on with us here on FM Talk Outdoors. Lake Pickle with Primos, our guest, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along and good to continue our conversation with Lake Pickle from Primos, the name that precedes him, which, by the way, if somebody had to design a name to get attention in the outdoors world or in social media in general, Lake, they couldn't have picked a better one. Your mom and dad, They did you right.
That's fun. I mean, it's funny you say that because that's actually where I was heading when we left off with that story. Like, when we left off, I said I saw Brad at the booth at the show.
Yep.
And that's like one thing I've always had going for me, and I can thank my parents for it, is usually when somebody meets me, they don't ever forget my name.
Nope.
I mean, just because it's so out of the ordinary.
So if he's looking down through a stack of possible candidates to come on board with Primos, he'll say, I remember that Lake guy, the Pickle guy. I remember him.
Mm-hmm. That's what helped me with Midwest Whitetail, too. I talked to Aaron as he was, you know, Aaron was like, I just remember I got this application. I was like, Lake Pickle. You know, it helps.
And, you know, when you're talking about Aaron, that's Aaron of the Hunting Public, right?
Yes, sir. He was, that was, so that's, it's, the hunting industry is a small world, man, and so it's funny. Yeah, Aaron Warbritton and Greg Clements, who's also with the Hunt Public, were my two number one mentors when I was at that internship at Midwest Whitetail. Those guys taught me a whole lot.
But and they've done so well with that show. It's and that's one thing you talk about, the small world. I made a note to myself about the cross-pollination that seems to maybe exist more now than before, but you can correct me on that. I mean, there's always been this cross-pollination, I guess, because of the Mississippi angle between Primos and Mossy Oak. People come back and forth, different. But now in today's world, there's cross-pollination based on individuals, not even companies, right? I mean, everybody's y'all might have all talked before, but now we know about it. You appear on somebody else's show, you be on their podcast, they're on yours.
Yeah, it's great, man. It makes it fun, you know, and it honestly, and a lot of that you can attribute to, I think, modern technology, but it's so cool because I think, like, whereas a few years ago, if someone lived, like, a few states away, or, you know, like Aaron's, you know, but Aaron, case in point, you know, I live in Mississippi, Aaron's in Missouri and Iowa, but I talk to that guy all the time. You know, I don't get to see him in person very often, but we're always in contact with one another. And it's the same with a lot of other folks in the industry. We just kind of all keep in contact with each other. Like, even Dave Owens, and you mentioned him earlier. I talk to Dave as little as possible, just because, no, he's a good dude, but, yeah, it makes it fun, and it makes it kind of what it is these days, I guess. But yeah, Aaron is the guy that I referred to that ran into Brad at the ATA show and helped start this whole deal for me. And then I ran into Brad at that show and said, "Hey, I'm Lake Pickle. I'm this kid that's been emailing you from Mississippi State for the past year." And it was just a lot of it. Like, so me ending up where I'm at now, I can attribute some of it to me putting in the effort and actively pursuing what I wanted to do, but I also have to attribute a whole lot of it to just the Lord's timing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I didn't know it. I just knew that I saw Brad at that show and I needed to go introduce myself to him, but I didn't know it. But at the time, they had just gone through a whole lot of changes in the video department. And they had just a bunch of the guys that were there at the time had left to pursue another opportunity. And so I met Brad. That was on a Sunday. Okay. And so Monday, I moved back up to Starkville into my apartment that I had up there, me and my roommate, because we had school starting back that next week. And so I meet Brad on a Sunday, move back up to Starkville on Monday. I remember it was a Wednesday morning. And I walk upstairs to our living room, and my roommate's up there, and he's watching the Outdoor Channel. I can't remember what show was on, but I remember he was watching the Outdoor Channel, and we were just sitting there watching TV, and my phone rings, and I had Brad's contact saved, but I'd never called him or texted him. We just emailed. And so my phone rings, and I remember my roommate, Daniel, he says, "Who's calling you?" I said, "Brad Ferris." And he said,
"Yeah,
no,
sure.
He's not."
Sure he is, yeah.
Yeah, Daniel, because, you know, Daniel was a, you know, kind of Primos fan like I was. Daniel's like, "Brad Ferris is not calling you right now." And I held my phone out, and Daniel's eyes get real big. He's like, "You better answer that." So I go running outside. I'm like, "Hello, hey, you know, hey, Brad, how's it going?" And he small talked for a little bit, and then he was like, "Look, here's the deal. I know you're in college. I'm not asking you to drop out of school. Please don't take it that way. I'm just asking if you would consider putting off college for maybe a semester because we need some help in the video department. I need you to film an elk hunt in 2 weeks." And so what, as you could imagine,
that was everything you had dreamed of just happened to that one phone call.
Yeah, it was pretty surreal. Like, I think I kind of like just, I think it took me a moment to say anything because I had to just, like, go back and replay in my head what had just happened. I was like, "Did he just ask me to come film an elk hunt?" You know? And so, as you could imagine, that was not a very difficult decision for me to make.
You're like, "I'm on my way."
Yeah, yeah. And so I called my parents, and my mom and my dad both have always been, like, huge believers in finishing your schooling, which is good. And so I had to, like, promise to mom. I was like, "Mama, I promise I'm going to finish school. You know, I promise. And then if that wasn't, you know, strong enough, when I actually showed up to the Primos office for the first time, because I did have to go, like, Brad said he needed me, but I still had to go and interview and kind of get, you know, a final last cleared to go do it, right?
Right.
And I remember walking into the office, and that was the first time I met Will in person.
And starstruck.
I was starstruck and a little bit intimidated, to be honest, you know, because, I mean, it's Will Primos, for goodness sakes. You know, I grew up watching him.
Yep.
And he would, Will is one of the most down-to-earth, humble guys in the world. So if he heard me say that, he would get aggravated at me because he doesn't like being perceived that way.
Well, tell him, put it on me. Tell him to get mad at me.
So we had talked, and I remember I feel like we were getting to the end of the interview process, and Will goes, "So you're still in school?" I said, "Yes, sir. Brad wanted me to, you know, stop for a little while to do this." He said, "Well, here's the bottom line." He said, "I'm not going to hire you if you do not promise me that you will finish your schooling." And I said, "Yes, sir, I can promise you." And I said, I can promise you that my mother would string me up by my toes if I didn't finish my schooling. So we're good on that.
And you're fixing to do that, right? You're getting close.
I finished this past August.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I finished in August. So that's how it worked. The original plan was, so I started, I was just on a contract basis with Primos. I was not a full-time employee. And so the plan was, is I was just going to help them through elk season, deer and duck season, and then I was going to go back to school in the spring. And then I kind of, it just, honestly, man, I started working with them, and it just fit so well. Like, I got along with everybody. I feel like everyone got along with me. I was loving what I was doing. And so I just kind of spun this whole idea. I started researching online school through Mississippi State, and so I came back to the executive producer and Will and everybody, and I said, look, because I knew they were going to need someone full-time. I was like, look, I can come on full-time, and I can finish. I can do this school online. I'm not breaking my commitments. I can still do my schooling, but I don't want to leave this opportunity, you know, right? Because if I would have walked away when I was just a contractor, whenever I finished school, there's no guarantee that they would still have a spot open for me. You know what I mean? I mean,
right.
they have to fill a spot, and I understand that. So I didn't want to lose that opportunity. So I was like, look, I can do online school and I can be a full-time employee. I don't want to leave this. I'm happy where I'm at. And they decided to go with that. And so, I mean, it took a while. That was in I started doing online school in January of 2015, and I just finished this past August. So it took a while.
Now, listen, there's a lot of people that don't have an excuse as good as the fact that they're working a full-time job with Primos to do that. There's a lot of people I went to school with that took 8 years. They weren't working at anything except a keg, maybe, at that point in time. So, well done and congratulations on the degree. I want to ask you one more shop question here, and then I want to get into hunting.
Sure.
And that is, as we look at this, if you now in your position, Lake, are looking at new videographers coming in, you're going to bring some new people in, other than Jordan, which I know he's your constant work you got to do with it. But if you're bringing a new videographer in, do you look at it and say, I want somebody who is the best videographer out there? They shoot, you know, they shoot weddings or they shoot sports and football events or whatever, and I'm going to teach them to go in the woods and be quiet. Or do you look for somebody who is a hunter that you can teach to run a camera? Which one, or is it one or the other?
I want experience in both, but I would much rather take a guy that knows more about knowledge in the woods and videos a little bit than take somebody that knows everything in the world about video but has never been in the woods.
The learning curve you is harder on teaching them how to be in the woods.
Correct. Because it's like guerrilla style filming, I guess.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The best way to put it.
Yeah, y'all don't get a lot of perfect tripod sets and chance to check lighting and all that.
No, I mean the most controlled setting you get is when we're deer hunting, because you're sitting in a tree and you kind of have your one spot. This is where it's going to be. But when you're duck hunting, when you're elk hunting, when you're turkey hunting, when you're moving around all the time and stuff happens quick and you have to set up quick. I mean, so yeah, I would way lean on woodsmanship and just time spent in the woods and experience there rather than videoing, because the video stuff can be learned. Because, man, look, when I came to Primos, I'd been hunting my entire life, but I only had 6 months experience with a camera.
Right.
You know, I mean, that was it. And so the rest of it was learned. And it, but that learning curve was steep, man. I went from the only thing I had videoed was some, I mean, which, you know, my experience in Midwest whitetail, but I'd never filmed an elk before. And so it was kind of like a do or die thing. It was a, you know, figure it out or, you know, sink or swim.
Well, there's a lot of us that learn best under that environment, right? I mean, if you want something that badly and the pressure is there, it seems like those places in our brain that need to open up to learn open up wide at that point if we take in a lot of information.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And to this day, and this isn't like, it's just the way it happened. So much of, like, part of getting good footage of a hunt, a lot of it has to do with how you run the camera and how you set up. But a whole lot of it also has to do with how the animal acts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to this day, one of the best elk hunts I've ever filmed was on that first trip to New Mexico. And it was just, and Brad was helping me. Brad was like, hey, you know, because not only had I never filmed an elk hunt before, I'd never elk hunted. I'd never seen an elk until that trip. So there was a good bit of like Brad, like, hey, you know, kind of try to set up like this, look for these things. But it was one that Brad shot. And the elk walked, he shot him at like 5 yards. And so it was like, I pulled back really wide and you got Brad at full draw in the frame with the bull walking past him with all the, you know, New Mexico mountain skyline in the back. It was gorgeous. And it was, all of that had a lot to do with one, Brad helping me, and two, just the way the elk did. But it was pretty cool. It was surreal.
So your subject matter, they were the big helpers. Brad and the elk were the ones that... made that easier.
Absolutely.
All right. We're running the break. Coming right back. More with Lake Pickle from Primos. Of course, you hear him with Speak the Language podcast. See him on the TV show. And it's just a real treat to talk to this guy. Has this the spirit that those of us that have... Well, he had the spirit and the stick-to-itiveness. Any of us that said, man, I'm going to work in the hunting industry. I'm going to do that when I grow up. He'd been saying it his whole life, and he did it. Talk more about that when we get back, and we'll... Talk about hunting. Talk about hunting along the Mississippi River, too. Y'all stay right there. All right, we're back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Remember, podcast pops up this show later on this morning. Plus, you can check us out with the replay tonight at 11, tomorrow morning at 7, and then Sunday evening as well. Mike Ward will be back from assignment soon. And then we'll see. We've got rodeo next weekend as well. And we'll be talking about some of the fishing that went on this weekend with the kids for the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament. Continue our conversation with Lake Pickle from Primos. And real fun to get to talk to Lake. It's I'm a fan of this guy's work, for sure, in the video side. And the podcast, Speak the Language podcast, which is one that I hit the refresh button, making sure you posted one up each week because it's something I look forward to listening to. You really, I don't have your numbers, I don't have the internet, but I got a feeling from the responses on your page, you've grown this podcast big time.
Yeah, man, it has been like, terribly encouraging, if that adjective even makes sense.
I like that, terribly. Okay.
It has been so encouraging how much that thing has grown. It's honestly surprised me. Like, I expected it to grow. I expected it to do well just because of the vision I had for it. But, yeah, it has been wild, man. I love it. I've gotten to the point where I love doing that as much as I love the show and hunting on the show and all that.
Well, okay. I got to ask this question. Was it when you came up, you said, okay, we're going to do this. We need to do this podcast. Primos needs this voice in the podcast sphere. Who did you tell? Do you have a reaction story from Will or from Brad? Or like, I can only imagine for somebody, Will, or maybe, I don't know, would just go, what? What are you doing?
Yeah, that's basically it. Actually, who I went to was, so our executive producer at the time was a guy named Ben Bredigan. And he was kind of who I ran all my wild ideas past. And I had just recently gotten into podcasts. Like, I'd gotten into listening to them, and I was driving to work one morning listening to a podcast, and I went, we need one of these. We need a podcast. We should do one of these. We have the platform. We have, you know, we have stories to tell. Like, it just makes sense for us to do a podcast. And so I got to the office, I walked inside, I put my bag down at my desk, I walked into Ben's office, and he just looked up at me, he was like, hey, I said, we need to do a podcast. And he looked at me for a second, and he went, do you want to host it? I said, yeah. And he went, all right, do it. I said, well, I got to buy some equipment. He said, yeah, just, he said, get whatever you need. If you think it's a good idea, go for it.
Wow, and I like that turnaround. That's good turnaround on a decision.
Honestly, man, I think that's kind of one of the many things that makes us work, you know, because as far as our team goes with Will, Brad, Jimmy, Troy, Jordan, myself, Ben, we all kind of work with each other. We know how each other ticks. We kind of, when we all push each other and know what we can do. And so Ben saw how excited I was about it, and he told me to go for it, and we just went. I mean, just like that. So, I mean, I ordered equipment that day, and then as soon as it came in, we started making episodes. And it'll be 3 years this September that we've been doing it.
You know, I like too, is it's a good chance, not all your podcasts, but some when y'all are on the road or hunting or whatever, you made a hunt. We're going to see that in a TV episode coming up, but it is, number one, exciting to hear about it right then, and number two, it's the best form of advertising ever for an upcoming episode of a Primo show. I mean, it really is. You get to lay it all out, and then people are fired up making notes on the, you know, notepad here. Oh, I got to watch the one when they're, you know, turkey hunting there or elk hunting there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the things, there was a lot of reasons I wanted to do it, but to your point there, is so, like, when we put out a show on Outdoor Channel, that show has got to be 22 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so many things about that hunt that you can't fit into 22 minutes, you know? And so I was like, we can have this podcast format almost like the Primo's Porch format. You know, you remember the DVDs, they're sitting on the porch? I was like, this is our way of still being able to do that. We get right, you know, we sit down, we do these podcast episodes, there's no time constraints, and we talk about everything that happened. Because, you know, when we do those 22-minute shows, it's not like we're purposely leaving anything out. We just can't. Like, some things we have to leave out. Whereas when we talk about a hunt on a podcast, you can go, if you want to talk for 5 hours, you can.
Yep.
I don't think we'd do that because people are like, God, this is too long. But you can do it if you want to. So it's been really, really fun. Really fun.
Well, you can talk for five. If you're Dan Carlin, you can talk for 5 hours. If you're talking history, you're one of those guys, or Rogan, right? Although I'd listen to y'all. They, as long as the conversation's right, it almost can't be too long. But I want to talk about that. Speaking of the, makes me think of Cottonmouth, thinking about the podcast. And, number one, I guess we'll do some backstory here. People that don't know, what is Cottonmouth? What about Cottonmouth? Explain that.
So Cottonmouth is a very special place on the Mississippi River inside the levee that we have hunted. The first year we started hunting Cottonmouth pretty much exclusively was my first season at Primo's. And it's really, I mean, anywhere along inside that levee is special because it's like its own little world as far as deer and duck hunting goes. It's so different from everything else. The way I explain it to people is, like, for me, where I grew up in central Mississippi, if you didn't hunt in the Delta or along the Mississippi River, you wished you did. That's all you dreamed about, because it's just the stories you heard was the deer hunting and the duck hunting along the river. And it was a really, really cool place because we had, there's several places along that area inside the levee where you kind of have two states can join, and so you have the opportunity to hunt multiple states in one property. Well, we had three different states. We had an Arkansas portion, a Louisiana portion, and a Mississippi portion, all right there in Cottonmouth, and it made it unique, it made it special, and it came with its own unique set of challenges, you know, because when you hunt along that river, you have to deal with high water and floods and how the deer deal with that, how the ducks respond to that, and it was Cottonmouth, over the time that we hunted there, kind of became its own character, you know, because it's like it had its own personality. That river was going to do what the river was going to do regardless of what you had going on, and you had to adapt to that. So it was very, very cool to be able to do that.
Yeah, and I think probably for people who have never been around the river hunting, it was kind of oh, wow, isn't that cool factor. But for those of us that are lucky enough to have hunted on the river, for me it's a Tom Bigby, and to some degree in Mississippi, it was finally – that thing that we experienced, there was a TV show about it. No, in the past, there had never been, those of us hunting along the river know, oh, well, you know, high water, we're cut off from this part, or we got to take a boat around there. That stuff, finally, we saw that on TV. That was really, it was really something to see people that did the stuff that we kind of did.
And I have to credit that like there was a lot of people that went into that, to us hunting exclusively. There was a lot there that a lot of people there that made that happen. But the first person to have that vision was Brad Ferris. That was Brad. Brad was the first one with that idea. Like, hey, why don't we try and document pretty much exclusively hunting this place on the river and just how unique it is. And it worked, man. People loved it. You had two sides of people for enjoying it. You had guys like yourself that had dealt with that before. And so you're like, man, it is really cool to see this on a show. It's never been documented. And then you had the people that hadn't hunted along the river that didn't really know that existed. And so they watched it as like, wow, I had no clue that people hunted like this and had to deal with challenges like this. So it was really, really cool, and it worked really well.
Yeah, it's a built-in, and I'm just going to throw my theory out here. There's a built-in adventure element, and maybe that's something that drew me to river swamp hunting all those years. And believe me, we'll talk about the other side because she can make you cry too. But the challenges, but even when you're semi-flooded and things, the challenges of getting in, that adventure was always a big deal. It was the, hey, we're gonna haul a boat behind the four-wheeler to here. We can get to here. Then we got to get across these two guts, and then we got another four-wheeler on this high ridge. We're going to ride in, but, man, at this stage, we're going to shoot ducks here, or the deer are going to be piled into this end. All that stuff is not even the hunt. Just getting to the hunt was always exciting. Growing, it still is. Heck, I'm pushing. Yeah, I'm 48. It's still exciting.
Man, look, I can remember this was two seasons ago. We had to leave the levee house, drive into Cottonmouth, park the truck, get in the boat, drive across, get to the island, get on a Polaris Ranger. We had to drive that Polaris Ranger up so far until the water got it, and then we had to pull a pirog, and then we had to pirog across a slough, and then we had to walk about 3/4 mile to get to where we were hunting.
Now, most people hear that lake and they go, oh my gosh, what a pain. But they're crazies like me. Lake, I hear that and I go, that's awesome. I wish I was with y'all that day. I dig that stuff. I can already feel my hip boots back on me right now.
Oh, man, look, it really, I mean, I'm not going to say it doesn't make, definitely makes me have to put more effort into it. But it's kind of like you said, it adds so much more to it. To me, at least, and to all of us, you're like, man, it adds like another, like, wow factor, I guess.
Yeah.
I think part of the allure is knowing that you're not in control at all. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I'm not electing to drive boat, drive pirog, walk. I mean, I have to.
Yes.
Because if I want to hunt right there, this is what nature's throwing me that day. You know, I mean, like, I can't do anything about it. I can either do that, or I can't hunt where I want to go hunt. You know, so it's cool.
I love it. It's good. And it was really, I mean, I don't know if you've heard from others out there, but know that there's, at least in my little peer group, when we saw that start happening, we said, wow, now this thing, now they get it. These guys get it. They got to do the stuff we've got to do. And but here's the problem for us. If we get, river gets high enough on the Tom Bigby or whatever, we get flooded out. It stinks. And we're lucky enough to have high ground to go hunt. But it stinks if we get pushed out of the swamp. At a certain level, we're done. We're done in there. But to y'all, not only does it stink, but that's y'all's business, Lake. I mean, you got to make TV shows. So that's a different story. I thought about that for y'all. When you get a – it's all gravy until it gets so high you can't hunt. And then what do you do to make – how many episodes a year you got to make normally? What do you do?
We normally do anywhere from 12, 13 – sometimes 14 deer episodes and duck episodes combined, you know.
Okay.
And which the duck, even if you're doing a lot of duck hunting, you're still vast majority of that 12 to 14 needs to be deer. So when that river starts acting wonky and starts making it to where you can't hunt, it can get a little bit dicey as far as, hey, what are we going to do to make television shows? Because we can't just put up a 22-minute show of us riding around in the boat going, man, we used to hunt here.
look how high the water is in that stand. Look at that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about there was a season, it was the fall of 2018. I shot a buck with my bow in a food plot on the last day of October. And then me and Jordan were shooting ducks in that same food plot in waist high water in the early season of duck hunting. I mean, it can happen just that fast.
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, after that, you can run. People always joke about us trying to multitask in the swamp, and I can run limb lines coming in and out. So we can get at the same time.
You absolutely can.
What about, let's talk about that with the idea, and I guess it's a bigger idea of business as much as it is hunting. So you decide to go from a model like most shows, right? They're going to go, they're going to have the episodes, but they're going to go, okay, we got an Iowa deer hunt booked, and we're going to go hunt in Alabama for one, a rut hunt here. You know, they're going to go different places, whether they be outfitters or land they have access to, but they're going to go around. This change with Cottonmouth, that was, I mean, that's every show. I loved it, but were people, did people go, well, you can't do that. People aren't going to watch the same place every week.
We had a few that kind of thought that, but again, I mean, and Grant, when this decision was made, I was year one at Primo's. And so I was just kind of just going with the flow. You know, I didn't really have much input to give, or I did, or I was just too scared to give any input, but I just really leaned on. I was like, Brad thought this was a good idea. Wilbur thought it was a good idea. And so it was pretty much, we're like, we're going with this, and we think it can work, you know, and it worked, you know. So, and we would throw in a different hunt every now and then. Like we went on a couple hunts, and we went to Kansas this past year, and we would go to some other friends' places, like Brad's friend Sean. We went and hunted with him once, but honestly, that wasn't too terribly different because he hunts on the river as well. He's not inside the levees, right outside it, but it's pretty similar. But it ended up being like people followed it. Like I said, Cottonmouth pretty much became its own character. Like, I can't tell you how many people ask about the skin and shed at Cottonmouth because it just became a thing, you know, because it was pretty much every show. If we killed a deer or if we killed ducks, we ended up back at the skin and shed. And so I can remember we had some guys come down and hunted with us, and they were some of our sponsors, and they got down here and they're like, we want to see the skin and shed. That's what they were just so interested in seeing, because I mean, you see it so much, you know, and it just became a thing. And so it was really cool to watch it grow and watch it become what it did.
It's the Downton Abbey of the outdoors world is what Cottonmouth is. Hey, we're coming right back. More with Lake Pickle with Primo's. It's a conversation about a lot, the whole business in general, Primo's and Cottonmouth and what is coming up next. Plus, I've got a list of questions here, and I don't even think I'm going to say rapid fire. I think we're going to have an extended show here, but I got some questions I need to get answered by Lake Pickle, and we'll do that when we return. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, and continue our conversation with Lake Pickle. And this one's going to go long. That's fine. This is going to be a two-parter. And that, it's worth it because it's good to talk to this man and get his take. Lake, we're talking about Cottonmouth before we went to the break, and I, with some risk of getting myself in trouble, I heard you and Jordan on the podcast the other day hinting around that y'all maybe have headed for the hill. Y'all headed for the hill some last year because you had to, or at least outside the levee, right? You had to head there to find somewhere that wasn't flooded out because you got TV shows to do.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
What can you tell us?
what can I tell you? So basically, like it's pretty much. I don't know how commonly it's known outside. Like the area I live, that's relatively close to the river and the delta and everything, but the Mississippi River, especially down here inside the levee, has flooded so badly, consistently over the past couple years. And you know, what we were talking about earlier, you know, it gets to the point, you know, the water can come up a little bit and you can still work your way around it. You can drive and boat and drive again and walk and make it work, but it gets flooded to a certain extent where you either can't hunt because where you hunt is flooded out, or sometimes if it gets to a certain level, the state will shut it down. You know, they'll say deer season is shut down until it gets back below this level, that sort of thing. And last season, there was a predecessor. You know, last summer of 2019, the river stayed up until, I want to say, August. And it stayed up for so long, and it just took such a toll on those deer. And you'll see it on the, like right now, we have new episodes coming out on Outdoor Channel, but right now they're the elk hunting episodes. Right after that, it'll roll into deer. And you'll see it. We struggled last season because of that flood. You know, it was and it wasn't just us. It was everywhere that hunted inside the levee.
Y'all's numbers were way down, right? I mean, not just the fact that those bucks didn't do what they should have. I mean, what kind of reduction? I mean, I heard y'all talking about a big reduction in numbers.
Man, honestly, I'd hate to – don't quote me directly because I'm no biologist, right? But I would say it seemed to be maybe 50% of what we commonly have.
And for people to understand, too, that those deer – they're going to migrate. The ones that don't drown, they migrate out to some point, and then, which has always been amazing to me in the river swamp, and then the day the water falls, they somehow end up back in there. But in y'all's situation, the water didn't fall for months and months and months and months.
Yeah. And so you had like a couple of things working against you. You had one, the fact that you lost a lot of your deer. And a lot of them, I think, it's a combination of, I think we had some get killed due to stress or whatever. And then I think you had some honestly that, you know, it was a thing, you know, like the river could come up, but when it comes up and goes back down, the deer come right back, mm-hmm. you know, because they're so used to doing that. But they were pushed out for so long. You had deer that went and found a new home range, and then they never came back. They just left. And so you had that. You had less numbers of deer, and you had the vegetation suppressed for so long that when that water finally came down, the woods looked like the month of June. You know, you had vegetation everywhere. So the deer didn't have to move. There was cover everywhere. There was native vegetation and native forage for them everywhere. They just weren't moving. So it made it extremely difficult. And to some point, you know, you got to ask yourself, you know, I mean, because, I mean, yes, we have to make shows, and yes, we're all hunters. We love to hunt, but you know, we as hunters, we call ourselves conservationists, and we don't just call us that. That's what we are. You know, it's like that, you know, who loves the game more than the hunter does? We all love the deer. We love to see them thrive. That's why we work on habitat. That's why we build food plots. That, you know, we like to see the deer thrive. It goes well beyond just shooting a deer. And so when you see deer that are putting under this much stress, you're like, maybe we shouldn't be. You know, we need to put a halter on how many we're going to kill, and, you know, we need to take tabs on how much we have. You know, it was a lot to deal with, and it was a tough season, but we made it work. And but then the river came up again and flooded us out, and so that's why we ended up making the move to where we're at now in the hills. Is, you know, we just couldn't justify trying to hunt there for another season when we knew what we'd be up against. Not just from a pure hunting standpoint, but for, you know, trying to make television shows, it just made it to where it wouldn't have worked the way that it was working. And I think it's cyclical. I think it'll absolutely bounce back, but, you know, I don't know when that would be. I mean, it could come back and be fine this year. Who knows?
Yeah. But it's been too often. It's been, and that's the, I think that's the decision I see y'all making. It's been, if y'all had one flooded year and then bailed out, I would have scratched my head. I'd say those guys know what they're doing. But I can see, I mean, it's happening. And it, by the way, what's happening on the Mississippi, the little brother version over here on the Tom Bigby, we've been flooded. We had a river stage this year on the Tom Bigby down to the Mobile River that I don't remember seeing in my lifetime. And and it stays up longer and longer, you know. And we, instead of it being every third year, you get a big flood year every fourth, it seems like it's flipped over. It's 3 out of 4 years are going to be flooded out. So, I'm not trying to make a living doing TV shows from it. So I get it.
Yeah, yeah. And it, like I said, it's a balance, man. I can honestly say that both factors went into that decision. Not only from a television standpoint, but from a standpoint of, man, these deer herd, it's hurting right now. You know? And so. And that's common among everyone that hunts along the river. Everyone's taking tabs on that and, like, saying, hey, we need to, you know, really pay attention to how much we take off this place. Because there's still, you know, I'm not trying to overstate it or over-dramatize it. You can definitely, like last year, you definitely could still hunt it ethically. You just had to pull it back some. You know what I mean? You had to be very, very meticulous and pay attention to what all you took off. if that makes sense.
Yeah, and just, and then we'll get on to some other stuff, because I could talk about this all stinking day with you. But like some of the you and I were talking about a picture that I took when I was flying over to Arkansas back in February, and it wasn't just y'all flooded. As we flew over, the way we went to go there, we were flying over Cottonmouth, so I took a picture. It wasn't just y'all, though. Back in the South Delta on Mississippi side, you know, on the other side of the river, it was flooded from, I mean, heck, the time you get into the Delta, let's say you're coming from coming up Highway 1 when you come over the Yazoo River, on up and the whole way back to, it looked like back to Greenwood. I mean, it was like, maybe not that far north, but that's the southern portion. It was wall to wall from the hills to the levee. And so...
Yeah.
Your problem you're talking about has to be a problem not just for the people inside the levee, but people outside the levee. Not, you know,
yeah.
I mean, they were flooded big time.
Yeah. And the thing, too, is, you know, we have a bad habit, hunters do, of just thinking about the deer. When that does that, it affects all the wildlife, man. Like, all of it. And then it takes, you know, there's more to making that ecosystem work than just the deer. Everything has a role. Everything has a role, and when it does that, it takes a toll on everything. So it's such a weird balance, and it's crazy to see. It's absolutely crazy to witness firsthand.
But so let's transition to this. Will we, coming up, get a chance to do what you did with Cottonmouth, kind of introducing us to this new place and then watching? Because I really do like watching the process of like when y'all moving day into Cottonmouth, right? And stand placement and wise and fields and where you located things and transit. Will y'all do that at this new place?
Absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely.
Because I'll be tuned in, because I like that. I like it a whole bunch. All right, hold on. We'll run to break and coming right back more with Lake Pickle right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, and glad to have you along and enjoying an extended conversation with Lake Pickle from Primos. And, of course, you can check out the Speak the Language podcast on, well, I would say, reputable podcast providers all over the fruited plain, right, Lake?
That would be correct, yes, sir.
iTunes, Stitcher, the whole nine of them. And let's talk about this season. You said elk episodes are running right now on the Outdoor Channel.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. They started airing, I think, last Tuesday was the first airing. We air on Tuesday at Central Time. We air Tuesday at 6, and Saturdays at 11, and Sundays at 9:30.
But what is nice is, you know, if you can't make the date to check them out directly on the Outdoor Channel, y'all's digital library is great. I mean, people can go online and you know, watch everything from elk to ducks to deer. And maybe those other
everything.
Things. What are those other, the ones that gobble, what are those?
We call those turkeys.
Turkeys?
Or is
never
a
heard
common
of
name. It's a turkey bird. They have a lot of names. But
I've given them a lot, yes, over the years. And I love that, too. I love the fact that I feel a kinship, even though I've never met you in person. But you and Jordan talking, the way y'all talk about hunting turkeys, lets me know you're my kind of people, because it's a... It's an obsessive compulsion of problematic proportion for me. I love
it more than breathing sometimes.
Well, you were hunting in June.
I know it.
So you win. All right. I want to ask you this. Let's start with elk. And so I wrote these questions down. I said, here's what I want to ask, Lake. First of all, what have you not hunted or videoed a hunt of that you want to? That's like, what's Lake Pickle's bucket list on that?
A moose.
Okay.
100%. Yeah, moose, for sure.
So lower 48 or Yukon up there doing a Jim Shockey? What do you think?
Yeah, I want the whole experience, man. I mean, I would do lower 48. I wouldn't turn that down. I would love to do both, but if I was given one, I'd love to go to the Yukon and either film or do an archery hunt. That's something I definitely want to do.
That's pretty strong. That's pretty. I think that's a good one. And what about that? What about, like, you tell me as much as you can here on the business. Does that ever come into the formula? I mean, because y'all's hay, you know, is, of course, deer, turkey, and ducks, and then and elk as well as the icing on top. But any discussion for moose ever around the office there?
They did some moose hunts before I came on, but you know, like I said previously, my first year at Primos was the first year we started doing the Cottonmouth shows. And so it wasn't like the only reason we kind of stopped doing those, I guess, more adventure type hunts is when we were focusing so much on building continuity at Cottonmouth and making Cottonmouth into the character that it was. It developed such a storyline that it just kind of made more sense to put all that focus there. I don't see any like moose hunts in the forefront in the near future, but it's not out of the question either. So I don't know, but nothing soon coming up. I wish I could say it was, but nothing soon.
Okay, so if Shockey or others are listening, Lake needs to go moose hunting. I'll come video Lake.
Sign me up.
Hey, I'll go. I'll carry the video camera, and you get to hunt. I want to see that as well. All right. So, whether you were hunting or videoing, that's on your list. Now, let's talk about with your experience now with Primos, because your story is like a lot of ours. That until you went with Primos, you weren't the globe trotting sportsman. You didn't hunt all over the map, right? You were kind of homeboy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was hunting around Central Mississippi as much as I could.
Right, so like most of us, then you get this now kind of passport to the outdoors y'all do with Primos. Even with Cottonmouth, y'all do elk hunting, and you talked about that being the first job you had filming for elk hunt. So let's talk about this. Your favorite states for, and I'm going to ask you about the critters. So now with your experiences out there, your favorite states, state or area, your favorite state or area in a state, to be specific, to hunt. First, let's do elk. What's your, if you could go anywhere to hunt elk or video somebody hunting elk, where is it?
Southern Colorado.
Okay.
Southern Colorado, for sure.
Hands down.
I'd have to go with Southern Colorado because there is a specific area that means a whole lot to me. But you don't have a bad option with elk. Like Montana, those are the two that popped in my head with Southern Colorado and Montana, because Montana is absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Mexico is gorgeous. But Southern Colorado, Sangre de Cristo Mountains, you get in there and those aspens when the leaves are turning gold and the thin air, it's you feel like you're living out of an old Western. Like, you feel like you're in a Jeremiah Johnson, the movie.
I do. One of my favorites.
It's especially, I guess, because I spend so much time down here in the Southeast. You go to Southern Colorado and you get in those mountains and you just kind of feel like everything feels like an adventure. Everything feels like, mm-hmm. like another notch above special than normal. And, there's a place up there, where you can get in areas that you literally feel like it's not manipulated by humans at all. Like, I absolutely love the habitat work we do for deer and turkeys and food plots and timber stand improvement and all that. But there's something about walking into a wild area that is not manipulated by a human, that has elk in it or has wild game in it, that the only reason they're there is because God made it that way. There's something very, very special and almost primal about that that is so alluring to me. So, Southern Colorado.
Yeah, that whole vibe has really been interesting to be hunting out west, too. The idea back home where we all work on habitat and management to make sure the game stays on us versus the guys I've hunted around out west, well, you just go to where the game's going to be. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. The idea of bringing them there. Nah, we just know that they're going to be, okay, well, the snow's this deep. They're going to be coming down. They'll be down on this ground. And then being there in nature, like you said, nature and God's provided them what they need to make it through. So elk in Southern Colorado. Now let's talk about whitetails. And I'm going to make this unfair. Whitetails, and you have to exclude Cottonmouth. You have to exclude that. So where outside of Cottonmouth?
There went my answer.
Well, that's why I'm doing it. I'm not going to give you the easy layup here. Like, if you it's not going to be right there by Cottonmouth. Where do you go for whitetails?
I would go to, an obvious answer is like Southern Iowa, right?
Yeah.
which I've never killed a deer in Southern Iowa, but I've filmed several hunts there and in Illinois. But if you ever experience the rut and see the rut happen in Southern Iowa or in Illinois, it's something else. So that's Southern Iowa for sure.
People have, and I've watched it, what happens on y'all shows, and then buddies of mine that have gone up there, they'll take a picture and they're sitting there at their truck with a deer in the back of the truck, and then they're taking a picture, and there's a buck chasing doe. It looks like 60 yards behind their truck, and it's 10 o'clock in the morning. And I said, this is not real. Y'all photoshopped it. No, they said, we killed this deer. We came out, loaded him up, and they're still chasing.
Yeah, man, look. So when I was working at Midwest, that was based out of Southern Iowa. And I remember I was filming a fellow intern named Lee Johansson one morning, and Lee drove like a 1992 Honda Accord. And it was a stupid cold. I mean, especially from a guy from Mississippi, from central Mississippi, it was like 2 degrees that morning.
Ow.
And so it's before daylight. We're getting out of his little Honda Accord, and I'm not a small person, you know. I'm like 6'2", and so I'm like trying to uncompress myself, decompress myself, getting out of this Accord, and we're parked off the side of the road. We're about to walk into this property that Lee got permission to hunt on, and we're standing, like, I just got the camera and the tree arm, and I'm standing on the blacktop, and the lights are still on in his car, and all of a sudden I hear commotion, like I can hear stuff running around in the woods, and then I can hear a buck grunting, and a buck chases a doe, like, 15 yards in front of the car, like, right past
it. Y'all just got out of it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's before daylight, so all I could make out was, like, barely some silhouettes, but I could hear the and then I could hear their hooves going across the blacktop road.
You know,
I was like, what world am I living in right now? You know, this stuff doesn't happen where I'm from.
Right, we've neither it's the fact that our rut isn't as tight, or we culled out all those genetics in Mississippi and Alabama years ago. Those deer died first.
That's it.
So there's whitetail. How about turkeys? You can't say cottonmouth. I guess to be fair, Easterns, let's break it down this way, because it may not be a fair, okay, where your favorite place to hunt. Where's your favorite place to hunt in Eastern?
West Alabama.
Pretty strong. Okay.
West Alabama.
Pretty good. Even better than right across the line in East Mississippi.
Like, a lot of this stuff is connected to, like turkey hunting is special to me beyond just the quality of the hunting. And so when I think about West Alabama, I think about just the history of turkey hunting that is there. I think about the friends I have over there, because when I go turkey hunting in West Alabama, I'm with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have a awesome time, and the turkey numbers, there's usually no shortage of turkeys gobbling. And so, West Alabama for Eastern, no doubt.
All right. I guess, obviously, the Osceola question is pretty easy because it's narrow. Although I've watched – that's on my list. And I've, each year is usually about now. I'm like, I need to get a trip booked down there, and I never get around to it. I got to.
Yeah.
But just if you – is Osceola hunting – is it 8 out of 10 like Eastern? Is it 9 out of 10 like Easterns? Is it 5 out of 10? Is there any commonality or any difference?
Dude, South Florida – like, and the first Osceola experience I ever had was with, he's a very good friend of mine now. His name's Brad Gibson. He runs G3 Outfitters. And just like I said, he's an outfitter, and we hunted with him. But that guy, like, I call him all the time and just talk, like, he's become one of our really, really good friends. And hunting down there where he's got in South Florida and all that area south of Okeechobee, where you truly get into, like, South Florida,
mm-hmm,
the Palmetto Flats and the swamps and Spanish moss. It is like, it's so different turkey hunting down there. It's wild. So, I mean, like, their gobble kind of sounds like an Eastern. And sometimes they even, you know, like Rios and Merriam's, obviously, they look distinguishably different,
right,
from an Eastern. Whereas, you know, Osceola's, you've got the black wings, but they look pretty similar. But it's just the way the turkeys are down there in the terrain. And the woods and the composition of the woods, it makes it so different. I absolutely love Osceola hunting. It's fun.
Now there's and always a chance that a Florida Panther comes slipping in while you're.
Yeah, I would rather it not, but there's a chance there.
That'll tear up a decoy. You think a gobbler will take up tear up a decoy? Let that Panther.
Someone sent us a video this spring. They were turkey hunting in Florida, obviously, because they saw a Panther. They were turkey hunting out of a surround view blind, and they had two panthers going at each other. I mean, like a full-on, like ripping and tearing fight, like 20 yards in front of the blind. It was nuts.
Holy cow. And it's a fine blind, but I don't know that Primo, should y'all qualify it as Panther proof? Is it?
And no, I'm pretty sure those two could have made it through that blind. They would not. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, that, they're doing better than me sitting in there. I would have been gone. G-O-N-E. Like, I'll see you, bye.
So let's shift. And you talked about Rios there. You know, the one time I've hunted Rios, and I know this is just a anecdotal, they seem to be ready, willing, and able. It made a guy from Southwest Alabama who'd been hunting, you know, educated turkeys my whole life feel like a superstar. That was in Texas. Yeah. How about you? What do you, Rios, where you want to go hunt them? What's your take on them?
I would say Kansas. Kansas is probably my favorite Rio spot. And they're definitely like, some people I hear them refer to Rios as like, if you hunt in the Southeast, like, you know, like you and I both do, if you're in Alabama, if you're in Mississippi, where turkeys are very, very prone to kicking you in the teeth and making you feel really humble.
Yes.
A lot of times you can go to Kansas and get some relief, or anywhere where there's Rios, Texas, Oklahoma. But I like Kansas, just because some of the places we've hunted out there, we have a very good friend of ours, a farmer out there that we hunt with a lot, and every time we go out there, we have a good time. And then we have our friends Cody Cuck and Jordy Schwarz with Heartland Pride, and we hunt with them a good bit too. And I just like the terrain out there, man, in Kansas, all those rolling hills and open crop fields. It's different. And, you know, their gobble sounds really, really funny and different compared to Easterns back home. And, so Kansas would be my answer there.
And I see the sun high in the sky on a lot of y'all's hunts out there. You can get on them later in the day.
Yeah, we do a lot of the times. It's different because everything's so open out there, so the turkeys are more visible. So, you know, seeing turkeys plays a lot bigger factor in killing them, whether it's like, you know, home where you're hunting like a huge swath of timber and you're not necessarily going to see them really until it's almost time to shoot them, you know?
Right.
So, that has a lot to do with the sun being up in the sky. We'll catch them out in fields later in the morning or later in the afternoon.
Now, my only experience with Miriams is seeing them alongside the road when I was coming and going 2 years ago on a mule deer hunt up in northwest Colorado, and we'd drive chain up and drive up the side of the mountain each day and hike in. And going up this road, the Miriams were like dang crows or buzzards on the side of the road. They just in flocks of 30, 40 of them, and we could about make any noise and make the whole, you know, every gobbler in the flock gobble, you know, and we do that, of course, because we're from Alabama. So we do it coming and going every time by that flock. That's all I know about them. How do they hunt? And where do you want to hunt them?
My favorite state is New Mexico to hunt them in. And again, like all my favorites are linked to, you know, sentimental value to me. That's where I killed my first Miriam. And I actually got to kill him in the snow, which, again, for
a
turkey hunter from Mississippi, shooting a turkey in the snow was very different to me.
Yeah. Hey, y'all, look at this. Take a picture. Look at me. I'm in the snow.
Yeah. It was I can remember because he came from a long, long, long ways, but it was so cold that morning. I can remember when I noticed he was coming. He was coming across this big meadow. And I slipped my finger from the trigger guard to knock the safety off, and I had to like give my finger some extra motivation to move because it was so cold my hands had gone numb.
Now I've never had that. I've been cold on a turkey hunt before, in a March hunt, but I don't think I've ever had a problem with my digits moving. That sounds like a duck season thing.
I'm talking numb, man, like numb. It was cold that day. Cold, cold. And it actually, a lot of the snow had melted off. The day before, we had like, I mean, it was like shin high in some spots. It was crazy.
Wonder if it affects will they strut in snow? I guess they would, huh?
No, well, sometimes, like, I can't, you know, give an expert opinion on that because that's honestly the only time I've ever seen it. But the day that it snowed that much, they kind of shut down. Like, we heard some in the morning time, but then it was it. I mean, it was like hunting early season gobblers at home. Like, they gobbled some in the tree and then one or two times on the ground, and that was it. And then the next day when a bunch of it had burned off and there was still some on the ground, they just kind of snapped back into normal. But yeah, New Mexico was fun because, you know, there's not many other places where you're truly hunting turkeys in the mountains. Like, I think where I shot that turkey at, we were at 9,000 feet elevation, maybe somewhere around there, 8 or 9,000.
That's some alpine turkey right there.
Yeah, well, it's cool because, you know, I'm leaning on what some of the things I've heard Wilbur say, but, you know, when you shoot a turkey, you know, in New Mexico at 9,000 feet, snow in the mountains, that is a pure mountain turkey Merriam experience, you know. So it was a lot of fun.
Man, you paint a very appealing picture for going to do that. And as we finish out talking about turkeys, I do want to just quiz you here on that that Maine thing. So Maine is the last of the states, right? It goes till when?
It goes to June 7th, I think.
Okay.
But Michigan does as well. Michigan stays open in June as well.
So have you hunted Michigan before?
I have not. Maybe next June.
So and those Maine turkeys, those L.L. Bean turkeys,
yeah,
up there, they act the same as Easterns on down in like a Virginia or Pennsylvania? Are they that, you know, or were you in the mountains, or maybe you weren't in the mountains? I don't know. What's it like?
No, we were, honestly, man, it was, the terrain was not what I expected it to be. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I'd been to Maine before on a vacation, and Jordan had been to Maine before when he worked with Mossy Oak filming there, but we were in a different part of the state. And where we were hunting, there was a lot of rolling hills, not really a whole lot of steep stuff. Well, I say that. There definitely was some steep stuff, but we tended to, like, just where the turkeys happened to be that we found, they weren't really around the steep stuff. But the woods there were thick, man. Like,
really?
Thick. Yeah. So the turkey that I killed, I killed him in the afternoon, and when I was moving to him, because honestly, I think we got there a little bit late, because we killed the turkeys, like the one I killed, I yelped him in, he was gobbling and everything, but it was like, I call it, and we see this back at home too, when it starts getting later in the season, that you almost have to get in there, I call it like their comfort zone or their reaction zone, whereas, yeah, like if they were, you know, in the as hot to try it in the season as you could get, you make a call of turkey in from 300 yards away. Whereas like this one, when I first struck him, he was about 300-ish yards away. But where I ended up setting up and killing him, I was probably a little under 150 yards to make him move, because he would gobble at me from far away, but he he wouldn't move any ground. But as soon as I got close, he came.
So you had to get in his hip. Once you got in his hip pocket, then he thought it was worth the stroll. Come see.
Yeah, but back to the woods being thick, like I couldn't get, he was on the edge of the open field, so I had to fall off down this hill and get in a bottom and walk up and then work my way up, and then I needed to get into the block of the woods that butted up to the edge of the field he was on. And I was taking, literally, I was taking 1 to 2 steps every minute, because those woods were so thick and so noisy. Like, I was so scared I was going to make a wrong noise and spook him. And then I was leaned up against a tree when I shot him, but I was stood up on my knees, because I initially just sat down like I normally would, and I sat down on my butt, and I said, I can't see anything. It was so thick in there.
So
I had to stand up on my knees. To
see. Like yellowtop or something like that, or just branches? Or
no. No, branches and briars and just not yellowtop. I'm just like a bunch of different briars and bushes just growing up in there. Just, I'm talking thick, man. Thick.
That is on my list. So I got the main. Yeah, so go to Michigan next year so I can get your Michigan report before I figure out which one I go to.
Well, if you go, I would suggest going a little bit earlier than June. And unless you want.
I want to shoot a turkey in June, Lake. Lake,
yeah,
I want to.
Well, then there you are. You know, there you are.
Don't ruin a man's dreams here. Don't do that to me. Before we wrap up, I want to talk about what to expect. And this is completely self-serving, y'all. So, what to expect on the Speak the Language podcast coming up? Are y'all going to start talking some habitat management? What are you doing?
Yeah. So during the summertime, we usually like to bring in a lot of guests, and then we'll talk on more habitat stuff. We've got some habitat stuff in the works, especially, like I said, going on this new place in the hills that we're going to be hunting. We're going to be working on that, you know, basically the same thing we did with Cottonmouth. I mean, like, we're going to be figuring that place out as far as, you know, what's the natural food that these deer are eating, what are we going to do as far as planting food plots, hanging stands, Where's the natural bedding areas? I mean, it's going to be very, very different because Cottonmouth, as you know, is in the Delta, so it's flat, you know, whereas like this spot is not flat at all. So there's different factors to bring in. So we're going to talk about that. And then we have always have some pretty interesting guests that we bring in. Like there's a girl, I don't know if you're an MMA or a UFC fan, but I geek out on that stuff, quite frankly. And so I talked to a girl this past week. Her name's Macy Barber. She's I think she's the number 10 ranked flyweight in the UFC. And she bow hunts and stuff as well. Comes from a big hunting family. So it was really cool to talk to her. And so, yeah, we keep it interesting during the summertime, no doubt. And then the most exciting thing other than the podcast that I'm excited about, you know, you talked about our digital presence and the YouTube channel and everything you can find there, is we're actually doing exclusive episodes on primos.com now. I don't know if you knew about that, but we were uploading pretty much real-time content during turkey season that would go up on episodes on our website.
Well, and that is I'm glad to know that, because that's kind of the new bar, right? I mean, people imagine the old days, you and I waiting around for a DVD or VHS. Now people are like, I want to see what they did yesterday. I don't want to see what they did last week. What'd y'all do yesterday?
Yeah, so it was wild because, I mean, that's kind of the format I came from at Midwest Whitetail. They were doing that same kind of thing. But, like, hunting for Primos this year, I can remember I killed a turkey, like, on a Friday morning, and it was up to watch that next week, like, on, I think we uploaded them on Monday. Wow. So, like, that next Monday, it was on Primos.com free. There's not, like, any subscription or anything like that. You just go to Primos.com.
And where do we go? Yeah, because I opened up the site. So to make sure I know what to do next time, I just go to primos.com and then
there should be a tab that says watch.
Okay.
And then click that. If you hover over that, then it'll say the Truth Web Series, I believe is what it says.
Bingo, right there. Lake Pickle, man, it has been too much fun. And don't just say this to say this. We're going to do it again soon. Maybe we'll do it again in person coming up.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on the show, man. It's been a ball.
It is a lot of fun. Lake Pickle with Primos, our guest, and we're wrapping it up for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.